If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in just a few minutes, Iowa Representative Ross Smith, who was an Iowa advisor to the Biden campaign, with his thoughts on this inauguration week. But first, let's get an update on what's been happening in Des Moines at the State House with Katarina Sestarek, IPR state government reporter. Hi, Katarina.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, let's start off with a controversy we've been hearing continuing over the use of masks and COVID safety at the State House. What's the latest on that?
Yesterday, the House of Representatives debated their rules for the session, and Democrats took that as an opportunity to introduce amendments to do things like require mask wearing, to require a virtual option for the public to participate in subcommittee hearings, which is the first hearing of a bill generally that is the step in the process that the public can participate in. But Republicans rejected all of those amendments and went forward with not requiring masks and continuing to do in-person subcommittees. Also yesterday, a group of labor unions filed an OSHA complaint, a workplace safety complaint, saying that the House and Senate leaders were being reckless by not doing things like requiring masks, by not requiring people who test positive for COVID to disclose that, and by not having their own contact tracing.
Mm-hmm. And so is this a controversy that's likely to continue in the days and weeks to come?
It seems like it'll be something that Democrats and others continue to bring up as a problem. One thing that they say is, you know, the Senate is doing its subcommittees by Zoom, which allows all kinds of people to call in and participate regardless of, you know, maybe if they're more, if they have health concerns that would make them more vulnerable to COVID, it allows them to participate. But the House, in order to participate in the subcommittee hearing, you can view it online, but if you want to talk at a hearing, you have to be there in person. Or you have to submit comments online, which, you know, might not be quite as effective. So there are a lot of people who are trying to push for a virtual option for House subcommittees.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about your report yesterday. This is about a state senator who seems to have overstated the danger he was in last spring during a racial justice protest in Des Moines. Tell us more about that.
Right. So last June, when the Iowa legislature returned to the Capitol to end the legislative session, frequently there would be a few dozen protesters associated with Black Lives Matter who would come in to the Capitol, advocate for felon voting rights restoration. They would sometimes, you know, have conversations with lawmakers. Even a group of them met with the governor at one point. So this senator, Zach Whiting, who's a Republican from Spirit Lake, last week on the floor of the Senate said that there was a point during that time that he was fearful, that senators were whisked off the floor of the Senate, he said, and put in a secure room. And then he also said he wondered if he'd have to, quote, shoot our way out of this racial justice protest. But then, you know, after reporters were asking questions of the Iowa State Patrol and of other lawmakers, not really getting answers, finally yesterday, Senator Whiting said he since learned that there was no immediate threat from protesters who were inside the Iowa Capitol in June. And then Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer said yesterday that he requested them to be moved off the Senate floor because he was still negotiating with House leaders and with the governor's office, and that there was no safety threat, and that, you know, if there was a safety threat, everyone would have known about it, that, you know, it wouldn't have been something that was hidden or anything like that. You know, I think it just goes to show that, Senator Whiting perceived danger from these protests that, while they were inside the Capitol, were nonviolent.
Okay. Interesting. Those comments last week, obviously tied to the attack on the U.S. Capitol 2 weeks ago. Let's talk about actual legislation before we let you go. Katerina, in her condition of the state address, the governor asked lawmakers to pass a requirement for all schools to provide an option for full-time in-person learning during this pandemic. Update us on that.
So this is the House and Senate Republicans have each come up with their own kind of version of this policy, but it would ultimately do the same thing, which is require all school districts to provide 100% in-person learning as an option. Parents would still be able to choose virtual learning if they want to or if they can accommodate that. But this is going to be a big deal next week. On Monday, both the House and Senate are expected to have subcommittees and committee hearings on these proposals. GOP leaders say they're really trying to fast track this, and this is what, you know, this is what the governor asked for. She asked for this to happen as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll keep our eyes on that quickly. Two efforts by Republicans to change the Iowa Constitution, one of those regarding abortion. What do the Republicans want to change there?
This is the third year in a row that Republicans are supporting this, but it seems like this might be the year that it actually passes both the House and the Senate. This is a response to a 2018 Iowa Supreme Court ruling that said the Iowa Constitution protects abortion rights in Iowa. This constitutional amendment would add language to the Iowa Constitution that says the Iowa Constitution does not protect abortion rights. And since it is a constitutional amendment, it's something that would have to, if it passes this year, it would again have to pass 2 years from now, and then it would go to a vote of the people, likely in 2024. And this has already been kind of fast-tracked in the Iowa House of Representatives. And yesterday, House Speaker Pat Grassley said he thinks that they have the support to pass it this year.
Mm-hmm. And the implications of passing that change to the Iowa Constitution?
Right. It would essentially open the door to more abortion restrictions, because with the current Iowa Supreme Court ruling in place, it makes it very difficult for strict abortion laws to hold up in court. And this is something that anti-abortion groups say that, you know, this needs to happen so that they can continue to restrict abortion in the state. And ultimately, you know, if the U.S. Supreme Court chips away at abortion rights protections at the federal level, abortion rights supporters say that this would ultimately make it possible for Iowa to ban abortion if the U.S. Supreme Court takes more action on that as well.
Mm-hmm. And finally, also a proposal by Republicans that would add gun rights language to the Iowa Constitution. Why do they say that's needed?
Right. So Republicans say that they want to add this gun rights language to the Constitution, Iowa Constitution, because Iowa is one of the few states that doesn't have it. And they say that, you know, this would protect against strict gun laws in the future in the state. The thing is, this language goes further than the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and those who oppose this say that it could actually open the door to striking down Iowa's current gun laws, such as, you know, requiring a permit to carry a concealed weapon. And again, this is a constitutional amendment, but it's already been passed. It's already been passed by the previous General Assembly. So if the House and Senate pass it this year, it'll go on the ballot in 2022 for a vote by Iowa voters.
Okay. IPR state government reporter Katerina Sestara keeping her eyes and informing us on activity at the Iowa State House. Katerina, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Former President Trump frequently played down the severity of the coronavirus. For President Biden, it is a top priority. The challenge of getting the virus under control has many facets. It's complicated, made even more difficult by two big problems. First, up to this point, our efforts to minimize the virus's spread have remained, well, half-hearted. Many Americans still refusing to wear masks or practice social distancing. And second, the early stages of this mass vaccination campaign have been muddled, we've seen, far behind schedule and full of frustration for people trying to get shots. Perhaps you are one of those frustrated people. Let's get a sense of how things relating to the pandemic may change here in Iowa under a new presidential administration. Natalie Krebs is with me, IPR health reporter. Hi, Natalie.
Hey, Ben.
Give us a quick sense of President Biden's bold plans for his first 100 days in office for the pandemic.
Yeah, so Biden, in his first full day as president yesterday, unveiled a nearly $2 trillion, that's trillion with a T, stimulus plan to fight the COVID-19 pandemic. So this includes an increase in testing, accelerating vaccine distribution, and then also just preparing for future public health threats. He's unleashed a plan to do 100 million shots in his first 100 days in office, which is pretty ambitious, but again, trying to do this by setting up federally supported vaccine centers across the state, even invoking the Defense Production Act, which will require, you know, the government and businesses to help produce, you know, gear to help distribute the vaccine. And as well, he's, you know, doing things like asking Americans to wear masks for the first 100 days and kind of increasing those mitigation strategies as well. So he has a very detailed, extensive plan on how he's going to approach the pandemic during his first 100 days in office.
How do Biden's plans mesh or not with what's going on at the state level here in Iowa under the direction of Governor Kim Reynolds?
Well, we'll have to see. But I mean, one, Governor Kim Reynolds gave her first press conference in about a month yesterday. And a big thing she talked about was the state's allocation of the vaccine, which currently is at about 19,000. In a few weeks, February 8th, that's expected to be about 39,000 doses per week. So it's pretty low. And Reynolds was saying one issue we're having is basically we're not going to be able to get through people very quickly because our dose allocation is so low. So with Biden's plan, it amounts to an increase in vaccine distribution. And then if it goes to plan, an increase in allocation, which would speed up distribution here in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. How does Iowa measure up with other states in terms of the vaccine distribution?
Yeah. So I guess in terms of our allocation, we're one of the lowest in the country. You know, I think we're 46 in the nation for our vaccine allocation. It's not entirely clear why that is. I mean, it does have to do with population. Iowa has a lower population compared to other states. But, you know, Governor Reynolds said she's investigating, you know, why our allocation's so low. We've been better at getting people doses when we actually get this allocation. Governor Reynolds reported yesterday the state has received about 160,000 doses of the vaccine so far, and they've administered about 106,000 of those doses. So a decent amount compared to other states.
All right. And it's interesting, you reported that Governor Reynolds says she's not sure if teachers and school staff will be vaccinated by the time this bill that we've talked about mandating fully in-person option for learning happens, right? So teachers at risk.
Right. So this bill going through the Senate that, you know, Katarina Sasarik has talked about, that would require schools to offer 100% in-person option. She was asked yesterday at the press conference if, you know, teachers would be vaccinated in time for that to go in effect. And she said she just basically wasn't sure. You know, that bill is advancing next week. Republicans say they're going to advance it next week. And the phase 1B vaccinations don't start until about February 1st, approximately. So, you know, we're unsure of the timeline there. If teachers are even going to be able to get their first dose by the time that law were to go into effect if it does reach Governor Reynolds' desk.
Okay. Natalie Krebs, IPR's health reporter. Thanks for the update, Natalie.
Thanks, Ben.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in, well, I guess it'll be after the break, Karen Kondrowski of the Carrie Chapman Katz Center for Women and Politics at ISU on the many glass ceilings shattered by Kamala Harris, now our vice president. But first, President Biden tackling his second full day as our 46th president. Let's hear some reflections from an Iowan who's been invested in Biden's bid for president longer than most. State Representative Ross Smith joins me now from Black Hawk County. During the Iowa caucuses, he served as the Iowa Director of Coalition Building, then in the general election as a senior strategic advisor to the Biden campaign. Representative Smith, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me again. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Let's take you back to Wednesday and have you share your thoughts from Wednesday's inauguration. What stood out for you? What moved you the most?
For me, it was really exciting to see that moment just take place for our country. But I think it was also reflected in his inaugural address, the we, not the me. And for me, that's something that really resonates with me and my vision, that we build this thing back better by doing it collectively, by doing it as a community. And for me, his new vision for leadership, the people he's surrounded himself with in this administration, is something that really resounds, and I'm excited to see what opportunities that provides for our nation.
You know Joe Biden fairly well, I would imagine, having traveled with him on his campaign bus tour through Iowa. What is your impression of him personally? I mean, a lot of Americans are getting to know him. He's been in politics for a long time, but Americans right. seeing that address, but you know him next to you on a bus. That's a different impression. What's your impression?
Right. Oh, I think he's as authentic as you see. I think he's a man who's grown over his time now, and I think one thing for us to put in perspective is he's gone through more than most of us can relate to, or he's gone through a similar experience that most of us can relate to. He's not someone who's separated from the day-to-day living, from the day-to-day tragedy, but also from the day-to-day triumphs that most Americans and most human beings get to experience. But that also gives him insight, right, to what the lowest of us need. He's evolved his perspective on certain things. He's a president that's now talking about systemic racism. Now we have to rid that in our society. And I think, you know, that experience, the ability to have withstood and gone through so many things in a lifetime really is going to be the foundational pillars that help him to lead our country through. He's genuine. He's a genuine guy who really does love ice cream as much as you hear on the radio and in public, but also thinks he's serious about this work. His expectations for us all are to be better than we've been, and I would really look forward to continue to have a strong relationship with the Biden administration to make sure that Iowans always have a voice in how we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Will you have a special link to the Biden administration, given what you've done in his campaign in the past? A special relationship there going forward?
I think I'll always advocate to the administration on behalf of my district and behalf of the state of Iowa. Regarding any special treatment, I assume I'll be treated as other folks who've not only invested time in the people, but also who are providing legislation and also trying to move the needle forward for the state of Iowa. I think reaching out to people in administration who I have relationships with, I think is within the realm of any elected official in our state who has questions about policy or how that policy impacts Iowa. But I do look forward to Iowa having a strong say in the things that impact our country, as I'm sure a lot of elected officials in other states would want as well.
Of course, historic on Wednesday as well, Kamala Harris becoming not only the first woman, also first Black American, first Asian American to hold the second highest office in our country. Describe what you see this as a step forward, what this represents, Representative Smith.
It's historic. I think in a day that was filled with historic moments, this was another to add to the list, and maybe the most important. I remember talking to my brother-in-law who's in South Carolina about when this is all over and done with, I think this will go down as one of the most memorable right elections and time periods in American history. And for me, being a father to biracial daughters, right, my daughters are Black and white, but they're women of color. For them to be able to see that example, for them to be able to look up and see Madam Vice President who looks like them, whose hair is like them, who dresses like them, right, is something that you can't quite put any kind of monetary value on it. It's life changing, and I'm really excited because Vice President Harris brings a certain aura that I think is really reflective of the new leadership that we need in our state, and I'm hopeful that provides opportunity in the state of Iowa for new leadership, new strategies in leadership, and a new perspective of what leadership looks like, not only in the state of Iowa, but across our country. So for me, it's a pivotal moment that I think, really changes the narrative of what leadership looks like in our state and in our country. And I'm excited to have been a part of it. And I look forward to really maintaining a strong relationship and Iowa benefiting from all the opportunities that this administration will provide to our state.
Mm-hmm. In the caucus season, in the caucus contest, neither Joe Biden nor Kamala Harris did especially well. The top finishers, Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg, Of course, later in the primary season, Biden easily cleared the field of other contenders. Why didn't Joe Biden get more support in Iowa? Iowa's been such a tremendous predictor of presidential candidates in the past.
You know, I think there's probably a few different reasons. I think at Iowa, we have to look at how we have access for folks when it comes to the caucuses. I know Iowa being the First in the Nation is something that's in question right now. I'm going to always advocate for Iowa maintaining its First in the Nation status. I believe that we may not be as racially and ethnically diverse as other states, but we do have ethnic minorities here and racial minorities here. If you're going to be president of the United States, I want you to come to Iowa and do the work. Come to our backyard, sit down in our living rooms and have conversations. And for me, I think we can do better about having access to the polls. I think people who are Biden supporters would have loved the caucus. And I think when we evolve the Iowa caucuses, I think what we'll find is that we're going to provide more opportunity for those folks who have to work 2 to 3 jobs to make sure they can participate in the caucus process. I don't think the vice president is going to hold any grudge, or the president is going to hold any grudges against the state. I think he looks forward to utilizing his strong relationships here that he's built since the 80s to make sure that Iowans eat just as much as everybody else as we go through this. So I look forward to hopefully revamping the caucus process, but I don't think it holds any bearing to the ability to lead our state and lead our nation in success.
Mm-hmm. Representative Smith, of course, Iowa's 6 electoral votes went not to Joe Biden, but to Donald Trump. What do you say to those listening for whom this week was not a celebration, but a setback for the policies those Iowans support? What do you say to them?
I say to them they should find solace in knowing that Joe Biden has a history of working across the aisle. He's somebody who has a strong working relationship with Mitch McConnell. I think that for those individuals, this is a time where our country, we don't just unite just for the sake of the word. We unite around the hard work. I think we unite around making people whole again. We have a lot of hurt people in our state and in our country, and hurt people hurt people. Joe Biden's mission is to decrease the number of people that are in that circumstance, to make sure that people are fed, are clothed, have good paying jobs, and not just surviving, they're thriving. I think those are something that we can all get on board with. I don't think that's a partisan thing. I think that's the most American thing that we can do is make sure that we lift up the least of these. He was strong in his we message in his inauguration, and that's who he is, and he believes in that. I think that, you know, former President Donald Trump, for all the things that he did, I don't think he focused much on the policy. And if there are policies that these individuals want to advocate for strongly, I think Joe Biden's always a willing listener, but I don't think he's going to propagate policies that are racist, policies that try to separate and divide us. He's about uniting this country, and I think that's everybody's mission and goal.
Representative Ross Smith, Iowa State Representative from Black Hawk County. Always enjoy having you on, Representative. Thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again soon. Thank you and be safe.
You too. Coming up after a short break, Karen Kodrowski of Iowa State University on the many glass ceilings shattered by Kamala Harris. Also more on the two Iowans facing federal charges in connection with the attack on the U.S. Capitol and the Eastern Iowa Airport becoming the first to screen outgoing passengers for the virus. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Eastern Iowa Airport, that's located just off of I-380 between Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, is one of the first airports in the country to launch health screenings for all outbound passengers. Now, the airport offers nonstop service to 14 destinations on flights operated by American Airlines, also Delta and United, as well as others. Let's get a preview of what passengers will experience starting this coming Monday. Marty Lenz is the Eastern Iowa Airport Director. Welcome back to our program, Marty.
Thank you, Ben.
Walk us through what outbound passengers will experience beginning on Monday.
Yeah, so outbound passengers will, as they approach the security screening checkpoint, they'll see professionals from Mercy Medical Center in front of the security screening checkpoint. So passengers go through a preliminary health screening that will involve a series of questions and observation, as well as a temperature check is included in that. If that guest passes that initial screening, they go right into TSA security screening. So we have that's the primary screening. And if a guest answers a question of concern related to COVID or presents symptoms or a temperature, they'll be referred to secondary screening, in which a Mercy Medical Center nurse will be present to hopefully identify the accountable condition, and then the customer will proceed through screening. If the customer in secondary screening would like to discuss their symptoms with a physician, we have the opportunity to bring a physician into the conversation and diagnostic process via telehealth. If a guest does not pass secondary health screening, they'll then be referred to their carrier for the decision to fly or no fly for that day.
Mm-hmm. So it is the carrier that makes the ultimate decision, and that carrier can make that on solid legal footing to deny a passenger with a boarding pass, with a ticket, deny them entry onto the aircraft.
That's correct. So the carrier has the contract of carriage through the ticket with those passengers, and so the passengers will be referred back to the carrier, and the carrier then makes the ultimate decision.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, Marty, how useful will these screenings be, since we know a passenger who shows no symptoms on the day of travel could still infect others on that journey or at their destination?
Yeah, great question. And there's no doubt. I mean, the process of identifying COVID for healthcare professionals and for all of us has been a real challenge. And we view health screening provided by healthcare professionals as one more layer in our approach at the Eastern Iowa Airport to do our part in slowing the spread, restoring passenger confidence, and getting them back flying again. So it complements our mask requirements in the terminal. It complements the cleaning we're doing, and certainly complements the airline protocols as well. So it's one more layer, but by itself, it's not a perfect solution. But one layer together, our goal is to help slow the spread.
How unique is your new program starting on Monday in the country among airports?
Yeah, to our knowledge, there's several airports doing temperature screenings. They're offering a variety of COVID tests and that sort of thing. We are not aware of an airport in the country that's partnered with a medical provider that does health screening for all passengers entering the sterile area or the gate area of the terminal. And I should point out that the commission, the airport commission, had public hearing and did take action to condition the use of the terminal on submitting to health screening in order to access the gate area. So that's unique.
Okay, thanks for the update. Marty Lenz, Eastern Iowa Airport Director, talking about how the Eastern Iowa Airport, between Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, one of the first airports in the country to launch health screenings for all outbound passengers beginning on Monday. Marty, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Kamala Harris made history this week when she was sworn in as Joe Biden's vice president. On Wednesday, she became the first woman, the first Black American, and first Asian American to hold the second highest U.S. office. Let's talk about it with Karen Kodrowski. She's director of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women and Politics at ISU. Karen, great to have you on the program again.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you, Ben.
You are also good with your analysis and analytics, but I want to perhaps ask you for the personal moment on Wednesday when Kamala Harris was sworn in. I've heard so many anecdotes of people being moved to tears, regardless of political affiliation. This is a huge step forward.
Yeah, it's an absolutely historic moment, and it was symbolically riveting as well. So, you know, not only did you have the first woman of color and the first woman being sworn in as vice president, but she was sworn in by the first Latina to serve on the Supreme Court, Justice Sotomayor, and she wore purple deliberately as a tribute to Shirley Chisholm, who was the first African American woman to run for president, and she ran in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Comment, Karen, on her qualifications for this position.
Yeah, she's very well qualified. You know, she has a law degree, and she served as a prosecuting attorney. She has a long career in public service. And then, of course, she served in the United States Senate and ran for president in her own right in 2020. So she understands the legislative process. She's going to play a pivotal role in the U.S. Senate, and she knows that cast of characters and Senate procedure. And she also has insight into law enforcement and, you know, the executive branch, since she ran a large government agency in California.
Right. Not the first glass ceiling she's broken. Certainly the most significant. She served as San Francisco's first female district attorney, also California's first woman of color to be elected attorney general. What are your thoughts on what this means for our country, a country still struggling with racism and treating women as equals?
Well, it's symbolically important. One of the ways that we measure representation in the United States is by what we call descriptive representation. So to what degree do the people that are in positions of power and authority look like the regular population, the rest of us, right, in terms of age, race, gender, educational attainment, immigrant status, how religion, however you would want to measure that. And so this is an important step forward. There have been 95 people who have served as president or vice president in the United States. 94 of them have been men. 93 of them have been white men. So, you know, in that mirror, we see distortion, right, in terms of, you know, historically who has represented us on this measure. And now we are taking an important step forward in terms of having a government that looks more like America.
Looking back in presidential history, we know that vice presidents can play a more or less prominent role in an administration. It's sort of a position that is, deliberately or not, sort of undefined in a lot of ways. How do you see Kamala Harris's role in this administration?
Well, what we have seen, I think, especially since the Carter administration, is vice presidents taking a more active role in governing and being then consequently better prepared to take over if the worst should happen and, you know, the president dies or is disabled. And we have seen very active vice presidents. And Joe Biden himself was a very active vice president and partner with President Obama. And I would expect him to take a similar approach with Kamala Harris. Vice President Harris, I think he respects Vice President Harris, her intellect, her wisdom, her perspective on things, and I expect that she will be, you know, in a lot of rooms where a lot of key decisions are made.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if I'm remembering correctly, Karen, in the reporting on his selection of her from his short list for vice presidential candidates, he placed a lot of emphasis on good chemistry between the two of them. Right. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's hard to have a good working partnership if the two main characters don't get along, right? And so that's one of the crucial things for a president who wants a good sounding board and sort of a partner in the decision making and somebody who will not be afraid to say difficult truths, is that you have to have an element of trust.
Right. And we have every evidence that this new president would not like a yes woman in the position of vice president.
Yes, I agree. I absolutely think that's the case. And I don't think that Harris is any sort of shrinking violet. She was very outspoken in her presidential campaign. She's been very outspoken in her role in Congress. We saw that as a member of the Judiciary Committee questioning Supreme Court nominees by President Trump. And I think that, you know, she will be, you know, just as forthright in the work that she does as vice president.
Right. And who knows what the future may hold, but not at all hard to imagine Kamala Harris as a serious contender for president one day.
Yes. Yes. And it is a very common stepping stone for vice presidents to then move into the presidency. So I'm sure that we are going to be seeing plenty more of Kamala Harris in
right.
the future.
And hopefully most of the media will do a better job of pronouncing her name. I don't know about you, but I've caught several reports that don't get this simple first name, Kamala, right, Karen.
Yes, but we will become accustomed to it, just as we did Barack and other, I shall say, less familiar names.
Okay. Karen Kodrowski, nice to chat with you, director of the Carrie Chapman Katz Center for Women and Politics at ISU. Until next time, Karen. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Quick conversations to end this news week. Well, the FBI has made dozens of arrests of people in connection with the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol a little over 2 weeks ago. An attack that left five people dead, including a police officer, and one that sent lawmakers and Vice President Mike Pence fleeing to shelter. Authorities say arrests ultimately could reach the hundreds. Now, as of this week, at least two Iowans have been arrested and face federal charges in connection with that attack. Let's talk with William Morris, who's been covering it. He's courts reporter for the Des Moines Register. William, welcome to the program.
Hello, glad to be here.
You've been focusing on Doug Jensen with a lot of your reporting. This is the Des Moines resident, 41 years old, arrested by the FBI on January 9th. He faces federal charges. He was in court on Tuesday. What was this hearing about?
This was a pretrial detention hearing to determine whether he's going to need to remain in custody while his case moves forward.
Mm-hmm. And what was decided, or do we know yet?
The order just came out on Thursday evening, and the judge says that he can be released, but that order is on hold, and prosecutors are expected to appeal it.
Mm-hmm. He was indicted last week on six federal crimes. Give us an idea of the crimes he's charged with.
Certainly. So he is charged with, as you said, six counts, of which the most serious is a felony charge for civil disorder. He also has charges related to assaulting or impeding federal employees, entering and remaining in a restricted building, and several counts specifically related to disorderly conduct and illegal entry at the Capitol complex.
Mm-hmm. You've written a little bit about his motivation, and just so that we have a picture of Doug Jensen, there have been a lot of photos and videos online in the news showing him there with that QAnon shirt, a very present figure when we look at the images of the Capitol invasion. What can you tell us? What have we found out about Jensen's motivation for taking part in this attack?
Well, Jensen, after his images went viral online, voluntarily spoke with the FBI and gave a four-hour interview. According to the FBI agent who testified at his detention hearing, Jensen is what he called a true believer in the QAnon conspiracy theory. He apparently, for the past 4 years, aside from going to work, he has spent nearly all of his time online soaking up this conspiracy theory, which believes, among other things, that former President Trump was leading a secret plan to overthrow the child traffickers and other criminals who were running the government.
Right. Of course, absolutely no basis to this conspiracy theory. But Doug Jensen, someone who has spent months, years, I guess, down this rabbit hole, consuming all of this, all of these baseless conspiracy theories. What could he face if convicted of this?
It's a hard question to answer because any sentence is going to go through federal sentencing guidelines, which are really hard to predict from the outside. But on the felony count, he faces a statutory maximum of, I believe, 8 years. Mm-hmm. And so they won't do it just by adding all of the sentences up. But I would guess from the outside he faces years incarceration if he's convicted.
Mm-hmm. Doug Jansen, the Des Moines resident, let's talk about the other one so far charged. This is a Cedar Rapids resident, Leo Christopher Kelly, arrested on Monday by FBI agents. Bring us quickly up to date on his case.
Yes, Leo Kelly, actually on the evening of the riot on June 6th, gave an interview to an online news outlet that focuses on Christian anti-abortion views, in which he essentially told them that he was in the Capitol for 30 to 60 minutes. They shared a clip of video footage that he apparently shot from the Senate floor. He said he went in and he prayed on the floor, but did not confront police or damage any property. He's been charged with two counts, both related to the illegal entry and remaining in a restricted area. And he has been released, has a court hearing in District of Columbia in February, and is home on GPS monitoring until then.
Okay. With an update on the at least two Iowans who've been arrested and face federal charges in connection with the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. William Morris, thanks for the update. Courts reporter for the Des Moines Register.
You're most welcome.
Just time enough left in the hour for Mark Simmet of IPR Studio One to groove us into the weekend. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Ben.
What do you have for us today?
Well, we have a couple of brand new songs for the new year. The first from Ani DeFranco, an artist that we've been following for many years on Studio One. Her albums don't come out quite as frequently these days, but always anticipated. And the new one is Revolutionary Love, and that's coming out next week. We've heard a couple of tracks in advance of that album. And as usual, as a composer, Ani DeFranco is always interesting to listen to. And as a lyricist, she very often has the view, compassionate social change, I think you could sum it up as being her view, and that's something we need right now. Here's one called Simultaneously.
I live in two different worlds, simultaneously. The one I seem to live in and the one that lives in me. And one is full of violence, oppression and disrespect, and one is full of longing to breathe and to connect. Yeah, my inner world is fragile, and the outer world is done, and this whole thing is such a hassle. Won't you wake me when it's done?
Of Ani DeFranco, Simultaneously. Certainly well selected there, Mark. Lyrics that fit our times, from what I can tell. What do you have next for us?
The next one is a cover song. You know, I love a great cover song, Ben. And this is from Courtney Marie Andrews. She released her last album last year, in fact, last summer. She is a singer-songwriter in her own right, but this is a cover song written by Paul Simon, originally recorded by Simon and Garfunkel. And I think she released this one as her comment on what's been happening in our country in recent times. It's America.
Mm-hmm. Let us be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag, so we bought a pack of cigarettes in Mrs. Wagner Park's and walked off to look for America. Kathy, I said as we boarded the Greyhound in Pittsburgh.
Wonderful song. That's all the time we have for it today. Mark Simmet, Courtney Marie Andrews with that lovely song, America. Mark Simmet, thank you for grooving us into the weekend. Mark Simmet, one of the hosts, along with CeCe Mitchell and Tony Daner, your daily soundtrack, 7 nights a week at 7 o'clock, the best new music and old favorites. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Ben.
River to River, produced by Caitlin Harrop. Rick Brewer and Matt Alvarez, our executive producers, Catherine Perkins. Enjoy America, people, and have a wonderful weekend. I'm Ben Kiefer. Take care.
Was a spy. I said, be careful, his bow tie.